Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Roofer Show, the place to be if you want to grow a more profitable roofing business. Today, we are going to dig into the number one problem we face as roofing contractors. And as we all know, that continues to be, where do we find good employees? I'm Dave Sullivan, the Roofer Coach, and I've been a successful roofing contractor for over 30 years. So why would you want to learn from your own experience, your own mistakes, doing it the hard way? Why don't you learn from mistakes that I made and the mistakes of others? It's like the crash test dummy. I've been there and I've done it. A little nicked up, but I'm here to share with you what I've learned. I want to thank everybody that's taken the time to give me feedback, whether it's leaving an iTunes review, which I really appreciate, and that is over 100 five-star reviews, or sending me a text, which I've been requesting. And you can text me at 510-612-1450. Take a second to say hi. Do it right now so you don't forget. But I got a great text from contractor in Florida. Says, "Hey, Dave, I have a small roofing company in Florida. I wanted to send you a quick thank you for what you do. I've listened to dozens of your podcasts and have incorporated at least three vendors from your programs into my business. Again, thank you." That's awesome. I really appreciate that. And also, I have vendors on occasionally, ones that I've vetted, that I've used before, that I know have a great product that hopefully will help the contractors. So I'm glad to hear that this guy didn't leave his name, but that he's using them and he's getting value from the show. So really appreciate it. Let me know. Give me some feedback, good or bad. I'm always happy to take it. So thank you for that. As we all know, today is follow-up Friday. What are we doing to follow up on Fridays? Simple. Here's three things that you can do to follow up. Pick one and do it. Number one, go back and call five old customers. Just say, "Hey, I'm just following up. We did your job a year ago, and I want to make sure everything is okay, and I want to just tell you that I really appreciate your business. Anything we can do for you? Oh, everything's great." Boom. How often do you get a thank you? It's going to leave a great impression. They're going to refer you. You're going to keep your business top of mind. Number two, by the end of the day, you want to have five-star reviews. So start dialing for dollars. Call your old customers and just say, "Hey, I'm following up. Want to make sure that you are happy with your job." Number one, that's the first thing. And when they say, "You know, I really was," they say, "Well, you know, what we're doing is we're trying to get more reviews from satisfied customers like yourself so we can continue to build our reputation around town. Now, I'd like to send you a link to make it really simple. All you do is click on it and just leave a few words about how you liked your experience. Do you think you could do that for us?" And then shut up. Wait till they say, "Sure, I'd be happy to." Send them the link and make sure that they do it, because it may take you a few times to be sure that you get that review. But at the end of the day, get five of those. If you do that every week, 50 weeks, say, times five, that's going to be 250 five-star reviews just in this 1 year. So continue to build on that. It makes a huge difference in getting your business out there and building trust with your prospects. And number three, this is what I'm always beating on my coaching clients, is you've got a whole list of open jobs that haven't closed yet. They haven't made a decision. You've got to push these people along down the pipeline towards making a sale or letting you know that you've lost the job. Keep that list tight. And the way you do it is just have your list with you as you're driving down the highway. make five calls and get hold of five people, talk to five people, get five answers. Okay. What do you need to do to get the work? When do you think you're going to do it? Are we going to do it? Let's get this thing done. How about if I come over and pick up a deposit check right now? Get five of those people and make those adjustments in your CRM. Too many contractors just sit there and let those open quotes go stale. You've got to follow up. A lot of them, they just don't feel comfortable doing that. Well, you've got to practice and you got to just do it. And that's the difference between successful contractors and your so-so contractors, is that they push themselves. You'll get more confidence the more you do it. So just get going, get started. Today, it's Friday, it's follow-up Friday. Pick one of these and just do it. What a tagline. Maybe I could use that. Today, I sit down with Vicki Suter of Suter Business Builders, and we get into where are all the A players? How do we find good employees for our construction business? How do we onboard them? How do we retain them? We get into all that. Vicki's been on the show a couple of times before. She's an author, has a great book called The Profit Bleed that we've talked about. Why so many contractors have all their profits bleeding out of their business. Great book. Everybody check that out. Also, she's a speaker, internationally renowned, speaks in Canada. So I guess that gives her credit for that. But Vicki is also in a mastermind group with me, and that's called the Construction Consultants Mastermind. And we have about 10 construction consultants. We all help contractors improve their businesses, improve their processes. So we get together as a mastermind group once a month online. We discuss what each of our businesses are doing. How do we help our contractors? Best practices. We have a retreat once or twice a year where we all get together away for a weekend. It is a great time. Great people in this group. I bring it up because every contractor should be part of either a mastermind or a peer group where you have the opportunity to sit down with non-competing contractors, talk about the problems that we have because we all share the same problems, and talk about the solutions that we can come up with. Because one of the problems we have as contractors is there's nobody to talk to, nobody that understands what it's like to run a business, to make payroll every week, to deal with regulations, insurance issues, employee problems that we all have to deal with on a regular basis. So this is why masterminds or peer groups, they're all great. I was always involved with peer groups. It really helped accelerate the growth of my business, and it'll help you guys too. If you're interested, I put together peer groups, and we're just starting up one now. So get in touch with me. Let me know if you're interested. But back to the workforce. You know, we get into some of the companies that Vicki works with, and they have a consistent flow of quality applicants. And then there's others that just complain there aren't any good people out there that want to work or take responsibility. They complain about all these millennials that have to be coddled and they're a bunch of prima donnas. You know, it's just not like the old days. Well, I was there in those old days, those supposed good old days. And I'll tell you, they weren't all that great. We had the same problems that we face now. It's just that all us old guys, our memory fades, and we were masters of the universe back then, you know? But it's always been the same problems. Nobody wants to work. We got a bunch of bums. And back then, if you were sober enough to climb up the ladder, you were hired. And that's the equivalent of the Confaga mirror test. But it's not just today we're having these problems. It's throughout time. It really is. So I think that today's workforce is the best workforce we've ever had. It's just different. And there may be less of them, but those that are able to adapt and understand what it takes to create a great culture in your business, one that attracts the best, the A players, those are the companies that are going to thrive. Go back and check out episode number 128 with Charles Antis. Charles runs a great business down in Southern California, and he retains 93% of his workforce. And there's a reason why, because he creates a great culture that attracts the A players. He's not out there placing ads on Craigslist. He gets a good flow of applicants that come in every day. So check out that episode. It's great stuff. But before I get into it with Vicky, I just want to give a quick thank you to our longtime sponsor, and that is Ruby Receptionists. These guys are virtual receptionists. They'll answer the phone quickly with a friendly, professional receptionist. You don't have to roll these things over into voicemail because your prospects, they're not going to leave a message. They're just going to move on to somebody until they can get a live person. And this is where Ruby really does a great job of setting up, teeing up that first part of the sale, which is leaving a great first impression. They also have a chat service. If you're not using chat on your website, you should really check it out because you'll notice that more and more of the top contractors are using chat. So go check them out at callruby.com/roofershow. Use my promo code ROOFER50 and they'll knock off $50 off your first month's service. But I have a number of contractors that I work with that use them. They love them. And Ruby frees them up to do what's important, which is getting out there, making sales, getting yourself out in front of prospects, handling customers, and being sure that when your prospects call in, they can get the answers to the questions that they have. So check out Ruby, callruby.com/roofershow. All right, well, let's get into our interview with Vicky Suter with Suter Business Builders. Vicky, thanks for coming back onto the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave. I really appreciate you inviting me back.
Well, we had some great topics before that we covered back in episode number 130, and that was the top reasons contractors don't make the money they should. Great show. We got some great response for that. So everybody check into that one. But also in episode number 79, how to stop the profit bleed. And that was about your book that you had come out with and why profits are just bleeding out of these companies. And that was also a great topic. Everybody check that out. How's the book doing, Vicky?
You know what? It's doing really well. I'm very pleased to say that it's been very consistent in getting out there. And, you know, it's like you're never rich out of selling books. Well, if you're the average person. If you're Oprah Winfrey, it's a little different. But the thing that I appreciate about it is I wrote the book out of my passion and desire to share what I've learned over all these years about what helps contractors make a consistent profit, make the money they want, have the life that they desire. And so I'm just like grateful it's getting out there and that it's having the impact that I originally wrote it to have. So that just feels really good.
Well, that's great. It's a short read. Every contractor should get the book. I'll have the link in the notes. That was tremendous. And it's also episode number 79. You can check that out. But there's some great information, how managing margin can save your contracting business. So I love it. But before we get into our topic today, which is solving our number one problem that we have in the industry, which is finding, keeping, retaining good people in our business, can you tell us a little about what you do and who you do it for?
Yes, thank you. So I help contractors, and that includes everybody in the construction industry as well as interior designers, make more profits, have more time, and love what they do again. And the most direct way that I do that with people is to help them understand how to hire and retain A players to their team and build the kind of company that great people want to work for. And those elements are so key. And, you know, so I'm excited that we're talking about the topic we are today because, you know, I do work one-on-one with clients, but I teach, you know, I teach courses specifically around this because it When people can unlock this key, what I have found is that it really helps them be able to have more profits, more time, and more fun. And so that's really the focus of it. I have a deep financial management background, which I got my start in banking. I was a controller of an outside international training company. And then I started this business 30 years ago when I was married to a painting contractor. And I understood a lot about the business and about what it took to, you know, be successful. And I just really fell in love with this industry and appreciate working with contractors and their authenticity, their coachability, and their hard work ethic. And I've just found that what I just help them do is have more clarity about how to plan for profitability in their business, how to build great teams, and how to consistently create systems and structure and processes around them that let them be free from being caught up in their business day in and day out.
Well, you're a real pro when it comes to consulting and coaching, and I call on you regularly because what's great about your business, I've never met somebody that is so organized and put together and can find things in just seconds, because I had mentioned in our introduction that we're in a mastermind group together, the Construction Consultants Mastermind, where we all are construction consultants, and everybody has been such a great help in get organized. You've got so much material, and you've been so kind to, you know, help me along the way, because it's a struggle, I'll tell you. But
we've all been there, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it takes a village, I think, too, to, you know, it's like they say that about raising families. But I think that's true, like being part of a professional community that is your peers of people who have the same interests, concerns. It's so powerful. Like for us, like being in the mastermind has been so incredible for me too. And learning so much and feeling like I have a support network. I have loved the experience and has definitely made me a better business person. And I've learned a ton.
Well, likewise. And I've talked before about how I've always been in peer groups in my contracting business and with other roofing contractors around the country, and that has really changed my business. I think one of the biggest problems we have as contractors is here we are, we're out there struggling, we're just trying to keep our head above water, and we're all alone. We don't have anybody that really understands what it's like to try to make payroll every Friday, run a business and deal with these. So you're really out there in the wilderness. But by having a peer group or a mastermind, you've got non-competing contractors that you can bounce off other ideas, come up with best practices. Here's how I solve that problem. Or when I've got an issue, I just pick up the phone and call you, and everybody's so willing to help. And I think that's great. Yep. And I think every contractor should be involved with that. And we've got a number of them in our groups because I'm putting together masterminds. So if anybody's interested in that, get in touch with me and we can put together these peer groups and masterminds. It's a great thing. But anyway, I love that. But
I'm glad to hear you're doing that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's something that really helps.
That's
contractors.
So valuable.
You know, I know that it helps contractors because it helped me so much. And what I want to do is make it easy now. What we did when I was a contractor, and I had a large roofing business, but we would travel to a host city. We would all come in, you know, we'd be staying for the weekend. And every time we'd do that, you know, two or three times a year, you know, it costs about $10,000 by the time you take time off and hire your facilitator and so forth. But what I want to do is help the smaller contractors. And I can do that by just like what we do. I mean, we get on Zoom once a month where we can have a face-to-face. We have an agenda and we just talk through this. So it's technology has changed things where it makes it really simple, don't you think?
Yes, I totally agree. Yeah, I love where technology has taken us in that regard, because then you can see people's faces. Yeah, you still have that like that connection with people, and it's not just over the phone. I feel like when we meet, like when I can see your face and other people's faces, it's like I'm talking directly to you. And so that does, and it makes it much more convenient, right?
Sure.
So people don't have to, you know, get on airplanes every 30 days. That's great.
Well, and it's affordable for the smaller contractors that didn't have that available to them. So Good stuff. Well, Vicki, let's jump into our topic today because we got a lot to cover. You've got some great ideas. I know that this is a special area that you get into, but what's the deal? I mean, why is it so hard to find good people today? It's our number one struggle. What can you tell us about this?
You know, I think that it's a twofold issue. One of it is that it is everybody is super busy, and there's more work than it's a supply and demand issue, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot more work going on in construction, and there are fewer people available, and the unemployment rate is really low. But I think the other thing that's at play here is that we have the next generation of contractors are far fewer going into the trades than there is of those of us in the 40, 50, 60s. There's a lot less of the, 2030s that are coming into the industry, and that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I think that's part of the issue. I think that the other part of the issue, because I do have clients who literally have people calling them to come and work for them, is I think the other part of the issue is, are we building the kind of businesses that are attracting people to want to come work for us? And it has way more to do than just with how much we pay people or what the benefits are. I know that we're going to get a little bit more into this, but it has to do with are we creating a culture that people are attracted to? And I'm going to throw something in there about that whole thing of the diminishing number of people who want to go into the trades. I'm a member of the National Association of Remodelers Industry, and NARI has taken this initiative on very seriously about how to help contractors and remodelers, in particular for that group, find qualified people and to train these kids, because not everybody goes to college. And so, like our chapter of NARI for the holiday party, we're sponsoring Conservation Corps, which is an organization that, trains youth who are usually late teens, early 20s, who maybe have had some difficulties in their life, and they teach them how to have trade skills, and they teach them how to, be able to have good work ethics and to have a sense of responsibility and ownership. And I've watched other people hire people from that organization who have had great success and I had someone last night say that it was one of the best employees they've ever hired. So learning to tap into some of those resources. There's also a high school near us that has a regional occupation program that teaches specifically all of the trades, everything from carpentry to plumbing. So there's ways, I think, that, it's upon us as in the contracting industry to also reach out and go, how do we connect with kids so that we start to build more interest in to tap into their desire to want to have a sense of contribution, who want to learn, who want to, we need to make it more interesting for them. So I think that's the other part of it, is that we need to address that issue at a very fundamental level of how do we get more kids who are interested. And so, getting involved in some of those things. And for people who are listening, if you're not a member of NARI, then maybe check it out, because a lot of the chapters actually have workforce initiatives going on right now to really bring more attraction and to develop that younger generation in the trades.
Yeah, and that's similar to, the roofing organization, the National Roofing Contractors Association. We're making a huge push to bring in younger and attract a younger workforce. Our average roofer is now 42 years old, and that's a tough job to be doing when you're 42. And, I'm a huge proponent of trying to get trade schools back into the classes, because I know too many people that have gone to a four-year college. They come out with a ton of school debt. They've spent the last 4 years. And granted, we've got low unemployment, but some of these jobs that you're able to get are just not high paying. Where we can come out of high school, we will take someone, train them as a roofer for free, and bring you up through the trades, the apprenticeship programs. And after about 4 years, you could be making upwards of $100,000. And those jobs are never going to be offshored. We're always going to need good craftsmen. So this is really, you know, and I'm starting to see a change, I think, in this whole thing, where we are going to be able to attract younger people, because it is it's a great skill, it's a great trade, and you can make a great living there.
You know, I just want to, so I think I completely agree with you, because like you just said, I just had that conversation with somebody the other day about the whole thing of bringing trade schools back into place and all these kids who have debt who, you know, I have three kids who graduated from college and only two of the three of them actually work in the thing that they got a major in. Right. You know, one of the three of them, I should say. So it's like, then, you know, kids end up with all of this debt for what? And, you know, I want to say one other thing about this whole thing of the younger generation not being attracted to the trades is that one of the things that's changing, and you mentioned before we got on this call, Dave, a little when we were chatting about the millennials and a different mindset about the millennials, is that they are very much wanting to work in an environment where they feel like they belong, where they matter, and they have a sense of contribution. Mm-hmm. And it is a fundamental desire of every human being walking the face of the earth. And so, like, we think that it's all about the money oftentimes, and and while people want to get paid well, and I'm not the one that originated this idea, there's a lot of studies out there that have proven that the thing that has people attracted to an organization, to wanting to do a particular type of work, to working with certain people, is when they can have a sense of that what they're doing is valued, that they have a sense of belonging and mattering, and that they're making a contribution. And, you know, that's really part of how do you build an organization that attracts people to kind of want to come to work for you. Is do you set up an organization where it's just, you know, grind them through, go do your job, I don't talk to you. Like, you know, there's a little bit of, I haven't built a culture where I actually tell people how to win the game. I just throw you onto a job and I give you some tools and I tell you to go do it. And there's not that interaction. And this younger generation very much is about and starved for, quite frankly, that interaction and that. So it's like and I don't mean coddling people or babysitting people. I just, there's so much more to how we can understand what's going to attract them, that it's not just about training them, but it's also about building the kind of culture in an organization that understands what matters to people and why do people want to come work for you. And the clients that I have that get this, who spend and invest that time in their people, in doing things like having really clear written position agreements and doing regular reviews and having consistent open communication about what's working, not working, about raising the bar and holding people accountable and holding people to their highest potential. Those organizations that I work with who do that as a practice, they have people calling them for jobs. Mm-hmm. So part of this is a cult, you know, it's like, how do we shift the culture and how do we shift how we think about what our job is as managers and leaders?
That's so true, because we've got a different type of workforce now. Everybody says, you know, I hear all the time, oh, you know, these guys have to be coddled. They don't want to work. They don't want to take responsibility. And I've been in this business a long time. Okay. So 30 years as a contractor, I used to work with my father. I can think back those days where we had the same gripes, you know, that no, you can't find anybody that wants to work, that's worth a damn, this and that. I mean, our qualifications used to be that, hey, if you're sober enough to climb up the roof, you're hired. Okay. So we're dealing with the same problem. But as you say, millennials, which are the people that we're going to need to attract, it's not that they don't want to work. It's not that they have to be coddled. It's just a different workforce. And if we can't adapt to that and we're still, you know, yelling and screaming and, you know, hey, you're lucky to have a job at all type of management, it's not going to work. And we have to be able to adapt. And I agree that culture and a career is so much more important now. And I had a great interview with Charles Antis, who is a big contractor down in Southern California, in episode number 128. And we talked about how he has a 93% employee retention rate. I mean, he gets calls all the time from people that want to come work with him because he has that reputation that is spread throughout the industry. What a great place this is to work, how everybody loves working there. And they make it fun. And it's creating that different culture where people want to work. So it's just, I agree with you. Well, Vicki, let's talk about a little about why it matters that we have good people. Why do we need to attract these A players? And I want to get into that a little, because to me, what's so important in this industry, in any contracting, is that the goal needs to be, how do I get out of that day-to-day running of my business? How do I get to the point where I've got good people in here, they're taking responsibility, and I'm able to, what I call, take that two-week vacation that so many contractors are never able to get. And the other thing that's important about that is it's the only way you're going to build a saleable asset where the company is not dependent on just one or two people, because that has no value to an outside buyer. So, Vicki, how about if we let's talk a little about that? Why is culture and why is this so important?
Well, you know, when we started our businesses, with the idea that we could make as much money as we wanted, and that we could have more freedom and choices about what we do with our time, and that we were going to love what we do again. And that's often not the case for people. And we find we like get into the middle of it, and we're like all of a sudden in the grind doing stuff that we don't like to do with people we don't like doing it with, and we're working a ton of hours and not making what we want, right? So it's like the key to doing this, and you know, you just said this, it's like the ability to be able to walk away from your business means that you need to build a team around you of people who are something more than helpers, but that they actually take ownership for results with you. So let me just say a little bit more about that. Oftentimes what happens is a business grows, and what you do is you start hiring more people. But you've been the one that started out with, I control the results, I know what needs to happen. And then you hire people to, quote unquote, help you. And then you help, you get helpers. And what happens is those helpers end up being people who show up like helpers. Like, they don't take ownership. They just, they require your direction. They require your constant babysitting. They require you to be micromanaging what they do, chasing after them for results. And you get exhausted after a while. And now all of a sudden your job is to be an elaborate babysitter, which is the element that most people who are business owners hate about their business and what they do.
Right.
So how do you shift that? Well, there's a couple of things. One is you start to build a culture where there's accountability, where there's more ownership. And the most direct way that I know that is that you stop having people be helpers and you have them be accountable to a result. So one of the things that we do with people is that we put in place, first of all, a organizational chart so that we're clear about what's everybody's role. So we don't have one person who one day does carpentry and then the next day does data entry, you know, in the office. That those are kind of extremes, right? But we first of all get clear about who, what are the positions within our organization that we need in order to be able to be successful at what we do. And that means, you know, identifying those key positions, whether it's a production person or an estimator or a salesperson or, you know, bookkeeper, what have you, office manager. And then the second thing that we do is we implement what I call position agreements. Now, the reason I make the distinction that they're not job descriptions and I call them position agreements is because of the way that I approach it. So oftentimes when I ask people if they have job descriptions, or if you look online at job descriptions, what they basically are is task lists. And when you give people task lists, what they are is helpers in doing you tasks. And what they're not doing is owning and managing for results. So when I write position agreements with people, we have them be oriented towards producing a result, not just about doing tasks. So now what you do is you start to shift that culture and that relationship with that employee so that you've identified in quantifiable terms what are the results that they need to produce in order to be successful at their job. And when you start to do that, and let's say if it's a, I'll use an example, let me give it, because that makes it a little bit easier. If I was talking about a project manager needs to do certain tasks. They need to make sure that the field is set up to do the work. They need to make sure to manage the client relationship. They need to make sure that they do client meetings on, you know, regular schedule, and that they have client projects come in on time, on budget, as promised. So those are either tasks, or as you could hear, on budget, on time, as promised is a little bit large and vague. So if I have a position agreement that instead says that project manager is responsible for having change orders on any scope of work be signed and authorized by the client before the work begins, that they're responsible for doing schedule updates every 2 weeks and communicating that with the client in the field, that they're responsible for doing cost to complete once a month so that they know where their project is headed, right? So you can start to hear a difference there that now I've started to quantify it in measurable terms. And what do I do in the process is I'm not trying to micromanage somebody's job. Now what I've given them the keys to the kingdom, because now what that project manager has is the ability to control what they do and know what they're managing against so that they can start to manage their time to specific results, and that they know what their priorities are so that they know how to win the game with us. And I've done this at every level of position within a company, and every time I've put position agreements in place within an organization, first of all, the team is always really happy. I've gotten some amazing, lovely emails from clients. This one client I remember who, when we did this with their team, they had a great group of people, but everybody was super unclear about what their clear accountability was, and the owner was struggling with getting past $2 million in revenue. And he kept going up above $2 million and falling back and up above and back. And he was working a ton of hours and he was exhausted. And he felt like he was babysitting his team all the time. Mm-hmm. But his team was really a qualified team of people that he really liked. And so when we implemented this process, we did an organizational chart, we put in position agreements. What he found was that his team, like, and they were sending me emails about it afterwards. They were like, I'm so grateful to have a clear understanding about how to be successful at my job. And they started implementing review processes regularly that they did with them. So it's like all of a sudden you go from somebody who's a helper who's just not sure how to self-manage to be successful at their job. And it was more than, you know, and a lot of times we have conversations with people and we go, well, we told you, We told you that your job is to do that. But if you don't quantify it for people and you don't set up a system where they can self-manage that result, where there's key deliverables with specific dates, as I just talked about, like, you know, schedules every 2 weeks, then what you have is you have a team of people who don't know how to self-manage. And, you know, that may sound like a silly thing, but honestly, it's like when you can set up the parameters and the structure in that way, you're going to find that your team starts to show up in a completely different way around you. And when they can own a result with you, now you're not chasing after them. You're going to set it up so that they have to report to you. And now they have a different accountability and a different sense of ownership and belonging and mattering. Right, so this kind of goes back to what we were talking about before. It's like that ability to feel like they are, that they have that sense of contribution, that they're no longer just a helper, that they actually are accountable for a result, is so much more empowering to people. And that's how you build a team that it takes ownership, that allows you as a business owner to not work in your business all the time, as you say, to be able to walk away and take a 2-week vacation because you just want to cruise, you know, to Alaska. And to know that your team can run your business without you. And, you know, and oftentimes people go, well, if I can't find superstars, you know, I can't do that. And I go, well, that's not true. I saw that company that I just talked about, that, you know, they had some great people on their team that he really liked. Not everybody made the cut in the end, But and that was a number of years ago. I still get emails from this guy about once a year going, you completely transformed my life. I work so much less in my business. I love what I do again. And I have the most amazing team that takes ownership of what they do. And you still are impacting our business today. Because, and I'm not trying to say that to brag about myself. That wasn't the point of that point. But the point was that when he transformed his culture to one where he built into the culture and into the structure that his team was clear about what they were in ownership of, they rose up to the challenge, and they were eager to take it on and to have that clarity about how to win the game with him. And ultimately, you know, what he got was he made more money. He, you know, totally, like, he tripled his business in the few years after that. You know, so he makes more money. He's got more time to do what he loves to do, and he just loves running his business more. And that's the, you know, that's the opportunity that's there for you when you can build the kind of culture where great people want to work for. Well, that's what it takes.
I love that. And this is really where a coach can help you, because you've got to be able to step back and take a look and come up with this process of not only, well, I always say you've always got to be recruiting, you've always got to be training, and you've always got to be retaining. And I think what you talked about as far as tasks, this is how most contractors start off. Here's what I want you to do. Go out and do it. Well, it's frustrating for everybody, because the person that you're assigning this task, you know, there's a good chance that he really didn't understand what it was that you wanted. And you end up going, ah, this guy's no good or not. But rather than starting at the end and saying, and I like what you said about, this is what a good job looks like. This is what we're trying to do. These are the results that I want to see. And we're going to come backwards and start from there with a roadmap, because people in general want to do a good job. It gives you great satisfaction, and this is what most people want. And you have to start off with that mindset. And as a manager, as an owner, you have to create that in people and give them the opportunities to succeed and make sure they do. But with just tasks, go out and do this. I've seen that so often where this guy just doesn't get it. You know, he's not doing his job. Boom, he's out of here. And that's where you get this revolving door, rather than saying, okay, I'm going to take the time. Here's what I want to see. This is what I expect. This is the accountability that you're going to have. And I'm going to follow up on that. And I'm going to coach you, train you as we go. But ultimately, here's the result that you're going to, that I want to see. And once you've done that, it's basically, I always say, you know, once you've got them up and going, they want to do a good job, their mind is right, get the hell out of the way then and go take that 2-week vacation and let them do their job, you know, where we don't like helicopter bosses telling us what to do. But I think,
well, and if you set up a structure whereby there's a clear reporting structure, right? If you set up a structure where you go, okay, we're going to meet every 2 weeks, and you're going to bring your schedule, you're going to bring your 2-week look ahead, you're going to bring your cost to complete, whatever that is, right? That you let the employee own their accountability, but you have to be rigorous and disciplined with them at the same time, right? To go, yeah, we're meeting every 2 weeks, and no, there's no excuses about, you know, a client called, you know, short of my mother or my children are sick, you show up to the meeting. That you hold that relationship and that communication as a priority, because it's your key to them taking ownership so that you can not have to be there as much. So that the other piece of it is having that discipline. And as you say, you know, I totally agree with you. People absolutely want to do a good job. We don't want to go in. Nobody walks into their job going, I really want to be a screw up. Nobody.
And I think what we talked about with millennials, I think this is even more important, where there's, you know, they have a purpose. And I think also you have to answer that question, what's in it for me? Here's why you want to do this. Here's what is in it for you in all of us. This is why we want to get together as a team, and you need to explain this. What the advantages are for everybody down the road, that end. Here's what this good job looks like. This is what we're all going to do. We're going to grow our company. We're going to, you know, expand opportunities, on and on. Don't you think?
Yes. Yep. Totally agree.
All right. Well, Vicki, now I know what we want it to look like. That sounds easy enough. So how do we attract these A players? How do we get these people to come and work on our teams?
Yeah, good question. Well, I will say that one thing is that by doing the stuff that we just talked about and building that kind of company, other people are going to talk about how they really like working for you. Because that whole thing of having them feel like they're winning at their job, they're being successful, that they have that sense of belonging, mattering, contribution, that they feel like they can, like they have ownership and they have a place and that they belong and that they are contributing, that really builds the kind of culture that people love to work with you that attracts other people. Now, the other key thing here is making sure that when you're hiring, that you're hiring the right person for the job. Because oftentimes the thing that is really the problem is that we're not good at interviewing and screening people for a job. You know, it's like I was laughing when you were saying earlier about, yeah, the olden days we were like, if you don't smell like alcohol, then we know you can get on a ladder, go for it.
Right.
So how do you have a better process when you're interviewing people, or even where do you find people who are a right fit for that job? So there are, you know, a number of things that I say to people. So, you know, how do you, the question is, how do you find, recruit, hire, and then onboard the right kind of people? So there's some steps that I would say that you want to take in order to do that. So, you know, and there's lots of articles out these days about how do you find good people. You know, having your employees I ask clients this a lot these days about where are you finding people, how are you finding people. Having your employees be your first place where you invite them to tell their friends, give them money for signing up if somebody stays 90 days, reaching out to your network of people, connecting and being part of your professional community. Like I was talking about NARI earlier, you were talking about the roofers group. Like, be part of your professional community and connect with people and talk with people and be constantly asking, you know, mothers groups, your kids' parents, you never know where somebody is going to come from. So constantly, like, doing that outreach and asking. And then when you do get candidates who come in, and maybe you use a headhunter or whatever, is that when you interview a candidate, first of all, you have a screening process to know if they're a right fit. But before you even begin, write a position agreement before you even begin looking for somebody. And that position agreement clarifies for you and for whoever's looking, what are the major responsibilities of that job? And what's the skills and qualifications that you really need for somebody to have in order to do that job well? So decide on, be clear on your criteria first before you even begin looking for someone and doing outreach. And then when you interview somebody, I recommend that you have clearly defined interview questions before they show up. So a lot of times, it's interesting, a headhunter said to me not long ago, she goes, I get like 80% of the candidates who come back to me tell me that the employer talked 90% of the time and they only talked 10% of the time.
Right.
And honestly, it should be exactly the opposite way.
Yep.
So when you're screening people and you're interviewing them, have a list of questions that you're going to ask them ahead of time. And I'm happy to share my list of interview questions. In it, I actually include, what kind of questions do you want to ask, and then what are you listening for? But you want to ask open-ended questions. So if I'm talking with a foreman, I'm not going to say, so, you know, did you manage change orders in your last job? That's a yes or no question. It's a close-ended question. Or were you responsible for laying out the crew in the morning? Or were you responsible for ordering materials? Those are yes and no questions. But if instead you said, tell me how you manage, how you manage the crew and the workflow of the crew, and then just shut up and listen.
Yep.
Or tell me how you manage change orders. Tell me about what the change order process is in your last job. Tell me about a time when you had to deal with, when work happened out of scope with a client. There's not a human being who's ever done a construction who hasn't had one of those, right? So, like, tell me how that happened and how did you handle that? And the client who didn't want to pay for it, right? Tell me of a time when you had to deal with a difficult employee. And how did you handle that? What was the situation? And then just shut up and listen. Like, stories are an amazing way when you let people tell stories of what actually happened, not tell me what your procedure was, right? Because they could make something up from the top of their head. Mm-hmm. But, like, get them talking about their job. Get them talking about that. You're going to find that the more open-ended questions you ask and ask like that, the more depth of knowledge you're going to have an understanding if it's a right fit. So spend that time. You know, you should be talking 20% of the time, the employee, the candidate, like 80% of the time.
And this applies so many places, not only in business, but in life. I mean, whether you're talking to your kids, whether you're out on a sales call,
yeah, right?
Talking about interviewing, I call it watch your talk, listen ratio. You call it shut up and listen, which I think is great. You know, it's perfect. And this is the thing. Stop flapping your gums and, you know, mm-hmm. and listen. This is how you're going to find out things. It's just like in sales. You know, if you're doing all the talking, yep. They're not going to tell you how to make the sale. And you're so right on that.
Yeah. And what I find is, sometimes if you really like somebody, by the way, if you really like someone, sometimes that's the worst person to hire for the job. Because if you're like somebody who's really sociable and really outgoing and likes to do sales, and you're trying to hire somebody who's going to be doing the job of a foreman, those personalities are not necessarily commensurate to be successful at that job. So we have to be careful when we're interviewing people that if we like them a lot, try to lead them to get, and I've done this, I will tell you, I've done this and I've had to really catch myself where I'm interviewing somebody and I'm like, I start to lead them in the way that they answer the question. And I'm like, okay, like back off. I know you really like them, but you really got to be open to making sure that this, you know, let them answer it and let them answer it with their own words. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing is, first of all, just doing that one thing, like you said, Dave, you know, it's going to make all the difference in the world because you're going to stop hiring people who just have a warm pulse and you're going to start hiring people who are the right person for the job. And yes, it can take longer. And yes, it's, you know, it's there's a supply and demand thing going on right now in the workforce. And taking the time to do that, making sure that you're vetting them, is going to save you way more time in the long run because you're going to be doing less micromanaging, less having to replace that person. The cost of a turnover for an average employee between the time that you lose, the cost of what they lose for a company, the cost of recruiting, the cost of turnover, it's like $25,000. That's a lot of money.
No kid.
So you're better off just going, yep, we're going to figure out how to get the right crew. And also, it puts less stress on the rest of your team. And, like, if you hire well, then you're going to build a better team. Yep. Then that attracts other well-qualified people to want to come work for you, too.
Exactly.
That's the other side of it.
I want to drop back to something you said before because it's so true, where you talked about just using a bonus system, for instance, to make sure that your entire team is recruiting. And just like and as you just said, makes everybody's job easier because they want to have good people working around them. They want to have like-minded employees, crews, where everybody's pitching in to help each other out. And if you think you're going to hire somebody on Craigslist and you're putting out these ads, it's not going to work because anybody that's worth a damn is working, right? And the way that I always looked at it was you've got so many people out there that are great hard workers, but they're just in the wrong company. They don't like where they're at. They're getting yelled at. They're not appreciated. And I think that's one of the biggest factors for losing people is just not showing them the respect that that you should be giving them, because most people do not leave for more money. They leave because it's not a good fit. You know, they're being treated like crap. That's usually what it is. But what I found is by creating this culture that we're talking about just creates new opportunities because everybody knows other people in the trades. You know, they're all friends. Mm-hmm. They go down and hang at the bar and so forth. And when you're down there, your employees talking about what a great place, you know, that they work, They love their job, and they're talking to their buddy that's working across the street at XYZ company, and they say, man, they treat me like crap here, you know? And they're going to be the ones that say, well, you ought to come over and check us out. And that just builds and builds on itself. And that's how you're going to get people. I'm not talking about going out and poaching people off of jobs like so many people do. But this will happen organically if you've got the right culture. And I think that's exactly that's really the main focus of what you're talking about today, isn't it?
It is. And you said it very nicely. It's like when you build a culture where your team is out there talking about what a great place it is to work because they have that sense of belonging, mattering, that they feel like they're treated well, there's good communication, they know how to win the game with you, you know, and they get paid well, right? I mean, it's you can't abuse people that way. But it's, as you say, you know, it's the whole package. So I like that. I mean, I think you're right. And then people talk about it, as you say, organically, right? And then it's more like it's the buzz of, God, that's a great place to work.
Yep.
I want to check them out. And I have clients like that, and it's really fun to see, especially these days, you know. But it takes time, and it's, you just got to do it one step at a time, right?
But it's the most important asset that you have is your people, and to develop those.
Totally.
One is hiring well, as you say, and that's part of learning to be a good interviewer, just as you talked about. Attracting the right people, interviewing well, and then as you talk about your process for showing them what a good job looks like, how you're going to be held accountable. And I think also having constant feedback of how they're doing. I always love to get feedback. I call feedback the breakfast of champions, because you want to get it and you want to give it, because that's how we get better. And but it takes effort. It's not easy to develop a company. But when you look at what's at stake, which is having a lot of those 2-week vacations, number one, and number two, it's the only way you're going to create value in your business that you're going to be able to sell down the road to have a leisurely retirement. Well, Vicki, in wrapping up, we got some great stuff that we've covered here, but you've also got some tools on your websites that is going to help contractors move in this direction. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So one of the things that I said a little while ago that I will give you a download for anybody who's listening on your show notes is the interview questions, but also just 9 steps to hiring great employees. So we'll kind of walk people through some of the stuff that we talked about today and let you use that as a resource. And then the other thing I have is a course called the Manager's Hiring Toolkit, which is a online course that I've got that's got these short videos with checklists and tools that you can use that will help you in your hiring, recruiting, and onboarding process within your company. So the course is intended to give you step-by-step for what you need to help you improve that process. And they can find it on my website at suiterbusinessbuilders.com. That's S-U-I-T-E-R. businessbuilders.com. And then if you click on the menu bar under courses, it's the first one there, Manager's Hiring Toolkit.
Well, I love it. And everybody should check out your website because you've got some great information on there. You've got I love your YouTube channel because you put out some great professional videos on a lot of these topics. They're short and sweet. And you look professional. I mean, this is, I've got a face for radio. That's why I don't do any YouTube work.
No, I don't agree with you, Dave. I think you'd be perfect on video.
Well, I'm sitting here in my t-shirt and shorts, you know, so, but you do have some great stuff, great
Thank
articles.
You.
It's just, everybody should check this out. This is some good stuff. Vicki, thanks so much. I think we're going to talk to you next week over Zoom at our mastermind group. And until then, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Dave. I really appreciate it. And I'm so grateful to have had this time with you. I love our conversations, and this is super fun. So thank you.
Well, that's it for the show today. I really appreciate everybody listening. Make sure you check out my website at theroofershow.com and download my free 1-page business plan It will get you started on having a killer 2021. And if you want to make sure that happens, get in touch with me at theroofercoach.com. We can jump on a free call, talk about strategy in your business, and see if I can help. And be sure to leave me some feedback. You can either leave me a review on iTunes, which I always appreciate, or send me a text, 510-612-1450. Just say hi. Let me know what you're up to in your business, what you'd like to hear about on upcoming shows. And until next week, thanks for listening to The Roofer Show.